Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Show tapes live some Thursdays on YouTube, channels A and N Zach. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more. I hope you enjoy the show. Hey, everybody. Sorry about that sudden and unplanned hiatus. Everything's totally cool. We're doing fine. New episodes will resume next week. We'll be back next week. Again, sorry about that. But we're back. Very excited to come back to the show. This is live audio from Otakon 2018. I had a great time with this panel. Originally, there was going to be a lot more people on the panel. It was just me and Mike. I was very happy Mike was there. I got through my notes kind of fast, but we got to the Q&A. Great to see everybody. I really had a nice time. Hope you enjoy the audio. Anyway, we'll see you all next week. I'm very excited. AnCast, it's back, I promise. Okay, I'm remembering to record this. All right, I feel really good about that. Okay, hey everybody, hi, I am Zach Burchi. I'm the executive editor of Anime News Network. This is Mike Toole, he's the editor-at-large of Anime News Network. And Anime News Network is 20 years old this year, yay! I am so happy to see all of you, and I'm really glad y'all came out. So I've been working at Anime News Network for... Oh, gosh.
Was it 2002 you started?
No, it was 2000... Well,
before that?
So, okay, let's just start at the beginning. 20 years ago, in a couple of months or so, this guy named Justin Savakis, who you probably know from the site and from Answer Man on Anime News Network, he founded the site back then because there really wasn't a place where, like, a one-size... Oh, you know, I knew I forgot to check the power options on this thing. All right.
Okay.
I'm going to have to do that a lot. So, where was I? Justin started this site, and at the time he was basically just like collecting headlines and posting what he could in his spare time. And then it kind of grew and grew and grew because Justin was, he was in the industry at the time. Like, he was working at Central Park Media, and like he was on the side running like a fan sub VHS thing and kinds of stuff.
He started ANN before he moved to New York and started work at CPM. I was in touch with him a lot at that time because I had my own site called Anime Jump.
Yeah.
Which is, has been, you know, in the internet graveyard for some time now. But at the time, both sites were quite vibrant because there weren't a lot of sites doing this kind of stuff at all.
Yeah,
like it was very easy to get in the game.
Yeah,
and just, you know, register a domain, start doing your own handmade HTML because this was before stuff like WordPress made building sites easy.
Yep. And if you look at, like, the earliest revision of ANN, you can definitely tell that... so, you know, and the site kind of stayed, you know, at that size for a little while. I joined the forums, I think, in 98, or, like, early 99 or something like that, and was very active on the forums for, like, a year. And after about a year, I was like, hey, you should have me write some stuff for you. And they said, sure, and started paying me $10 per column to write Answer Man. In like that was 2000. That was like December 2000. The year 2000 was when Answer Man started, and that was back when nobody knew anything about anything. And so the questions I would get would be like, "When's the next DVD of Cowboy Bebop coming out?"
Yep.
That's the hard question I would have to answer. But that like early Answer Man is all like that, and that's kind of the way. So the anime industry at the time back then was like VHS was still basically king. I mean, 98, like, DVD was just kind of getting started.
You could count the number of DVD releases in 1998 on like, one hand.
Yeah. And this was also an era in which anime fans were expected to pay $29.99, $30 or so for four or so episodes of a TV show. Or
Sometimes
less.
Sometimes you only get two.
Sometimes you get two.
Yeah.
Or less of a TV show that you were not supposed to have already seen. Like, that was kind of the implicit
thing there. Like, they were selling you on Saber Marionette J or the Vision of Escaflowne, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You've never seen this before. Like,
yeah, it's they had brand to, new, baby.
Yeah, yeah. But you had to buy a 26-episode television series, four episodes at a time, for $30. Sight unseen.
Yeah.
Sight unseen. That sounds crazy now when I just repeating it, like expecting people to consume things that way, but anime fans did. And so that fueled what sort of came next and what we wound up sort of, I would say a large part of ANN's expansion in the early 2000s was thanks to the DVD bubble, which was gigantic back then. But you're still talking about, in these days, you're still talking about like relatively small industry, relatively small, like pretty small, like mom and pop companies. Like, at the time, it's, what, ADV, which is still kind of mom and pop. Funimation, which was a little bit bigger. Like, they had Dragon Ball, but they're still minuscule compared to what they are.
Oh, yeah, they
are.
Were tiny. Yeah. I mean, Funimation was a company formed to get Dragon Ball on television, specifically.
And yeah.
At first, they only kind of succeeded. So they were this little, like, tiny, like, 6 or 8-person company.
Yeah, and largely that's what we dealt with in those early days, was, like, you deal directly with the CEO, like, all the time, because he's one of 5 guys, and they, like, don't have a PR person. Like, that's the way it was back then. And so we've been around since you know, those early days. The site, I quit. I didn't quit. I got another job at, I don't know if anyone remembers, Wizard Magazine. Yeah, back in the day. I got a job there, and I went there for like 1.5 years and couldn't handle New York at all, but that is when the site finally got big enough to hire people in like 2005. Christopher McDonald had purchased the site and had finally grown it enough to start, like, actually hiring staff. So this was only, I guess, 13 years or so ago.
Well, they had their time in the wilderness for a couple of years, too,
yeah,
on Main News Network. This site was initially handed off to a gentleman named Isaac Alexander. And he was a good dude, had good intentions, but he just didn't have time to run the site. So for, like, you know, I think, like, 5 or 6 months in you know, 2000 or 2001, like, not much was happening on the site, and it wasn't until Chris and also his partner at the time, George, got involved that, like, the ANN started turning into the ANN we now know and love.
Yeah, well, that was, Chris was like, okay, I'm serious, I want to actually turn this into a business instead of just a hobby thing, and, you know, he did his best. I guess George Phillips was around then too, and they brought the site together. But that was responsible for a lot of early growth, was the DVD bubble. And so Chris started finally hiring people. I was like the second person he hired. He hired Egan Liu, our news guy, first, I think, and then he hired Dan, who's still our web guy. And all of us, of course, still work there.
It's kind of crazy.
That was 2005. And since then, we've gone through a lot of changes, but not as many as you might think. I feel like ANN, and I've worked there forever, I feel it's kind of, it's weird that it still exists. Like, we're a small publication that has somehow managed to survive, like, all this enormous media churn and this, like, hurricane that's been out there. Somehow we've managed to survive for that long, but we've been through a lot of crap. My boss bought a magazine in 2006, 2005 called Protoculture Addicts. I don't know if anybody remembers that magazine. Yeah, it was a good magazine. But my boss purchased it and then, like, didn't staff it. I was sort of expected to just, like, put the whole thing together for no money.
Yeah, and the guys who ran it originally, who were also from up in Quebec,
yeah,
like our publisher Chris, they were still involved, or tried to be, but they had day jobs, right?
They had day jobs, and, like, these people had been working on this magazine for so long that they would do a lot of their work for it on yellow, like, legal pads, like, physically writing it out on legal pads and then transcribing that into a, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's old school otaku doing stuff, man. It's really old school. So he bought Protoculture Addicts, and it didn't really last that long. We had it for a couple of years, and we managed to keep it going for a little while. But so he bought this magazine, like, maybe a year before the bubble burst, the DVD bubble burst, and that is when you saw Bandai Entertainment start going away, and Genion start going away, and, you know, ADV suffered a major, major blow back then. Like, all these companies were suffering horribly and certainly not spending a lot of money on print advertising, which is what Protocol Geratics required to continue. And money just ran out after a while, and we had to put it to bed. But it was sort of a short-lived venture. There was our brief and extremely unsuccessful flirtation with video streaming in the late 2000s when we kind of got it into our heads, like, well, maybe we could try to stream some anime, too. Like, just try and do it as well.
That period when Anime News Network was actually licensing off.
Yeah, we licensed anime, like, for 6 months or something. Yeah. It did not go well, and now I think I realize, like, oh, what a bad idea that was, because there's no way we would have been able to compete at all.
Oh, not at all. But, I mean, at the time, though, Crunchyroll was not what Crunchyroll was now. They were like a reformed pirate site that were just starting to go legit.
Barely. So
you could realistically compete with them back then.
Yeah.
I seem to remember that Chris, like, the first title he really wanted to get and got thwarted on at the last minute was like Tiger and Bunny.
Yeah.
Like, Anime News Network almost got the rights to Tiger and Bunny for.
Yeah. I remember he called me and he's like, okay, I'm going to tell you the show that I licensed. Don't get mad. I was like, what do you mean don't get mad? And he's like, it's called Ore Emo.
It's called I Can't Believe My Little Sister Is
yeah.
This Cute.
Yeah. The glory days. Yeah. That was a fun phone call. That was sort of a short-lived, and we were licking our wounds a little for a while after that, but things kind of turned around. I was really happy after that because I feel like we kind of went back to what our core mission is supposed to be, which is reporting the news and providing editorial. And that's kind of still what we're doing now. We've been steadily, ANN has just sort of steadily gone like very slightly uphill pretty much every year since it started. And our audience has grown. We do about 8 million per month or something like that now. It's all right. And we've been able to expand our staff. So, like, I finally have additional editorial staff for the first time in the site's history. In the last like couple years, there's been more than just me working on putting together the site editorial.
I feel like in the last 5 years or so, you guys have been on a freelance basis. You've been able to bring in and push through like 30 or 40 new voices.
Yeah, we've tried.
In writing.
Yeah,
so that's been very good.
That's been really good. And I've been glad, like, I've pushed against spending a lot of time and resources trying to move into video editorial, because that you have to commit fully to that. It's a big risk, and if it doesn't pay off, you're spending a lot of money and time on something that didn't work.
Yeah, a lot of big media companies tried to, quote unquote, pivot to video, and it rarely worked out for them.
Yeah, it did not really work out at all for a lot of them, actually.
Yeah.
And frankly, like, the people that I talk to, ANN's user base is a little older, and they mostly still just want to read. Like, they can read faster than the video will talk to them.
Yeah, let's hear it for reading.
Yeah. The worst thing in the world is when you, like, need to know how to do something, and you type it into Google.
Yeah.
And it's 15 YouTube videos, and you're like, just
and
text.
And the YouTube video doesn't tell you what to do. The YouTube video has several minutes of exposition.
Yeah.
And a little story about the life of the person.
Yeah.
It's like internet recipes.
Yeah, right, yeah. So that's kind of been the last, like, 20 years of covering the anime industry. It is getting extra weird now. Now it's starting to get really, really strange as the former companies, like, you can look at pretty much everything now and see its humble beginnings, and now it's been absorbed into the largest media empires the world has ever seen. Sony is now the owner of Funimation.
A few times removed. So, yeah. So it's not like, they're talking on the phone every day, but yeah.
Well, but, and Warner Brothers is, Crunchyroll's getting folded into Warner Brothers. That'll just be part of the Warner Brothers portfolio. So we're no longer dealing with little kind of sort of boutique mom and pop companies that spend their marketing resources on Anime Expo every year and Otakon. Now it's like, what does AT&T want to spend money on to promote anime?
Yeah.
And that is impossible to figure out. But that's like the next challenge, I guess, for us. Is also, now we're tiny little independent press dealing with much larger companies that are, it's a challenge.
That is going to be pretty weird.
But I think that's kind of right around the corner for the industry. The next couple of years will be really, really interesting to watch, I think. And I guess we'll be there doing it, hopefully. So that's been kind of that. Before I get to like a Q&A sort of thing, what I wanted to do was kind of go through. Usually when I do a panel like this, I throw out some sort of tips, like, hey, who wants to write for Anime News Network or really any other online, like, really anywhere if you just want a job freelance writing about anime. I've got sort of a list of things that I think everyone should probably do or at least consider. So I thought I would slide into that. So does who in here has interest in... Actually, let's start this way. Who in here already does, like, writes about anime on the internet? Not just on a forum, but, like, on a blog or somewhere for a site or something? All right, okay, so a fair number of people. That's a surprising number. and how many of you have considered or would like to consider that and like to get paid to do it, like, write about anime on the internet? Okay, a larger number of people. So the good news is you can do that still. It's possible. There's a number of outlets that will pay. There were years where I would have to be like, okay, so bad news, we're the only people paying right now for people for writing about anime. The good news is, like, anime now, like, because one of the reasons is because it's controlled by these giant companies now, it's getting covered by a wider array of publications. So your skills as an otaku and someone who also wants to write are a little bit more valuable now, and you might actually have better luck at places like Vice or The Verge or
Kotaku
or, you know, yes, or mainstream gaming sites, but also pop culture media sites that just cover film and television.
Sci-fi.
Yeah, sci-fi, covering more anime because it's got more money behind it now. So that world has opened up. Freelance rates are not exactly better than ever, but you can still get paid to do it. And the other big thing, and this is a question that I get, like, a lot. What, like, skills do I need to have? What does my resume need to look like? I found this talking to a lot of different editors and stuff at other publications. They don't really care. They just look at your writing samples and whether or not you are capable of hitting deadlines and being easy to work with. And those are actually the three things that matter.
Yeah.
Are you a good writer with an interesting perspective? That's number one. Number two, can you hit deadlines? And number three, are you easy to work with? That's it. There's no other barriers. There's not even really an age barrier. Like, if you're 17 and want to do it and you're a dynamite writer, there's plenty of places that will hire you to write. The important thing right now, I would say, is your perspective. That's the thing that I think needs to be interesting and the thing I think you're competing with other people the most on. So when your pitch lands in my inbox, it needs to be really special, interesting, have a unique angle, something personal, something that you really know a lot about in order to stand out. And, like, that's, like, the biggest way I think that writers compete with each other now is perspective and, like, on your pitch, the pitch itself. Which is interesting because in the past it used to be like, yeah, it matters. Like, we appreciate it if you have a journalism degree. We appreciate it if you have a creative writing degree or something like that. You know, like, it credentials seem to matter more.
Yeah.
It's literally just the voice. It's just the voice and the expertise.
Really is, yeah.
And that's it. I hire people from all across, like, all walks of life. And I know a lot of other places do that too. So that's kind of the landscape out there right now.
But, I mean, yeah, I, as far as writing voice, I always tell people, you know, I had two influences when I was first starting out as a professional writer in the mid-1990s. One of them was Roger Ebert because, you know, he wrote in this voice that was quite distinguished but also kind of chummy. That was really appealing. The other one was a music journalist named Chuck Eddy because I actually started out as like doing work as a DJ and reviewing music for local music magazines in Boston. And he was not quite Hunter S. Thompson gonzo journalist, but he was casual to the point of ridiculousness. And for me, getting started was kind of mixing that, you know, distinguished scholarly but friendly with complete, you know, jackass voice. That was the foundation of me as a writer. I've evolved a little bit since then, but I'm still mostly the same.
Yeah, developing a style is really important, and that means, like, practice, like, a lot. Like, write a lot. A lot. And when you don't want to write, like, figure out a way to make yourself write. Like, find the motivation to sit down and write, because you won't get better unless you do it, and you won't have anything to show anyone unless you actually write. If you get it into your head that you're only going to write if you already have an audience or you already have a platform, it's going to stop you before you even get started. Like, the point is to just get the writing done. So that's super important. A lot of writers will stop themselves because they're not already successful or they already have a place to publish,
right,
or whatever.
Right.
But it's important to just do it and do it for yourself. But more importantly, do not ever write for anyone for free unless it's yourself. Like, write for yourself for free.
There's a lot of people out there who will want you to write for free, and you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean you should only write for the big bucks. If they can make an arrangement where everyone's happy, where, you know, they're giving you something like product, or you know, they're giving you credit to, you know, they're giving you like Amazon credit and access to some of your favorite voices in the business. That's a trade. That's at least not nothing. But just don't just do your work and give it away.
Yeah, don't let anyone tell you that, you know, the old cliche for exposure. Don't fall for that. It's not worth it.
It's not real.
Yeah, it's not real. It's definitely not real. I also would like, and this is another big thing. A lot of people will tell you like, oh, you really have to have a big social media following or whatever in order to get hired by certain publications. There are publications that you will have an easier time getting hired if you have a large social media following. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine there are publications that will hire you probably only if you have a large social media following. But the ones that you're likely to be applying to, that's a bonus, but don't worry about it. Like, you don't need to stress or be anxious about that. It's fine. Just make sure your writing is as good as it can be. And it's funny, like, that really is the only thing that you need to focus on in the earliest part of your career is, how good is my stuff? Can I make it better? Is this compelling enough? You know, that kind of thing. That kind of applies to all things. Like, if you want to write, but you're like, okay, well, I also want to give a shot, like, doing YouTube or podcasts or whatever, that all counts. Like, if you submit a pitch and your samples are, like, a podcast and a video that you did, well, provided you wrote and edited the video, that counts as a writing sample to me, IMO. Like, I will look at your YouTube video and see if you've got chops to do the writing. So, yeah, I feel like, you know, the options to you are basically limitless in terms of getting your name out there, making sure people see what you're writing and all that kind of thing. I guess that kind of does it for my notes. We've been around for 20 years. Mm-hmm. This is the panel about it. If y'all have questions,
well, can I start on the questions?
Go ahead.
I'm curious. What are some of the site's milestones in your mind that come to mind? I'm just like, okay, so what are the big things that you've done as the managing editor of the site?
I guess 2002 was when we started doing the preview guide, but it didn't really become the preview guide until like 2008.
Oh, that's actually a really good point. So how many people here use the preview guide on ANN?
Yeah.
Use the preview guide constantly. That thing's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. And
it helps you sift through like the 40 or 50 new anime we get four times a year.
Yeah.
And find the ones that are worth watching immediately.
Yeah, yeah. That feature takes a long time to put together, but in the earliest days, it was me and one other person just watching everything and writing up increasingly tired opinions. Just like haggard and like...
Everything was only about half of what everything is now.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice.
Is that that's not even PowerPoint, is it?
No, this is literally just a full screened JPEG.
Well,
that's how much prep I put into this sucker.
I wasn't gonna say anything. But the preview guide literally was just two people. And I mean, at that point, had Chris and his staff like built the content management system yet, or were you like typing in everything?
Sort of. It was just a nightmare back then. But in 2007 or so is when I was like, okay, well, in order to compete with like blogs that are doing this stuff like immediately, like the minute the episode airs, they've got a million screen caps and what amounts to a long synopsis of the show. I was like, well, what if I bring in like five people and they all review every single episode?
Yeah, as much as
they possibly can, mm-hmm. and just break these writers in half, basically. Mm-hmm. And it worked. And millions of people read that thing, and it's still going strong now. And only in the last like couple years, how slow change happens at ANN. Only in the last couple years did we finally start organizing it by show instead of writer.
Right.
Which in the early days I was like, look, these guys work really hard. Mm-hmm. They're on this stuff 24/7 during the preview guide weeks. Like, I want them to be recognized. I want them to feel like they're getting their recognition. So I sorted it by author, but sorting it by show really made a lot more sense.
Yeah.
So now it's a lot better and easier to use, I think. And we also launched recently, we have started doing manga preview guides too. And those cover like 3 months worth of books all at once. And that's another group of like three or four writers that's just snapping in half, covering all that stuff.
Because manga and light novels are a big deal now.
Yeah, and everything has grown. And like, that's another huge change, I think, between the industry then and now. Mm-hmm. Anime now, and I'm not sure how many people really agree with this or not. It might be a hot take, but anime now feels like back then, and I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that you were forced to buy 4 episodes for $30.
Right.
Everything was really special. Everything was like, oh, if you saw that anime, you considered purchasing it, right?
Yep.
You would think about it. It's like anything you saw all the way through, you might actually consider buying it, collecting it.
Yeah.
Now it's disposable churn. Like, yeah, it is just the same churn as every other type of content, 40, 50 new shows every 3 or 4 months. And stuff is disposable. I was having dinner with some friends last night, and they were talking about cosplay they might expect to see. Mm-hmm. And it was like 12 or 13 episodes sort of confections from last season or this season. And it's like, people will not even be talking about that. It's popular right now.
Yeah.
8 weeks from now, no one will. You'll bring it up, and people
will
be like, oh, yeah, I remember Cells at Work. Remember that? Yeah. That old thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really how it is now. And covering anime, like, has the way we cover anime on ANN has changed to match that. Like, so we did the preview guide, and then preview guide basically was popular enough, and we always kind of figured, like, well, what if we just never stopped doing preview guide and just covered everything all the time? So then we started doing that sort of with daily streaming, which now ANN has like the AV Club used to do this. I don't think they do it anymore, where they review like 50 shows a season or something like that. We review like 20 to 25, something like that, mm-hmm. like half the season, which is all we can justify. Anything less than that 25 is stuff that like less than 1,000 people are reading. It's like, yeah, there's so much anime now. But that is a major difference in the way things have changed since then.
I really admire the writers who do like, you know, 500 to 700 words a week, every week for an entire run of a series. You had me do that once with Ninja Slayer, and that show had problems of its own, challenges of its own, but like I couldn't do it. I think we stopped after like episode 7 or 8.
Well, it was also like the show was bombing horribly.
The show was bombing. The thing is, it was my kind of show, but it was very repetitive, and I was just starting to run out of things to riff on.
Yeah, there's nothing else to say after a few. No, I did weekly reviews for the show Death Parade like two or 3 years ago, and like I really enjoyed it, but it was also kind of grueling. And not like, now I never want to watch that show ever again.
And it's crazy to think that you watch one show over one season, and at the end of it you're like, oh, I wrote 7,500 words about this thing.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah The fun thing about that too is with daily streaming, it gives us real insight into the weekly ebb and flow of popularity for the season. And then we have to also sort of account for things like Darling in the Franxx, right? Which amazing traffic for us. Mm-hmm. Through the roof. Everyone was reading that shit. Mm-hmm. But not because... but not because they were all like super in love with the show.
Yeah. Because they wanted to argue.
Because they wanted to fight
to argue about it.
Yeah, so that happens sometimes. We were frankful. Wow. Yeah. We were thankful for Darling in the Franxx.
Frankful for Darling in the Franxx. And it's also interesting how there's like, there are shows every season now where you just can't account for their popularity. Nobody knew that Kimono Friends was going to do what that did.
No.
And I feel like, you know, is do you think Cells at Work is turning into like this season's Kimono Friends, where it's just like everyone's starting to latch on?
No, people just like it. It's just good and people like it. It's not like a breakout, like people are still going to care 6 months from now. It's just good and people like it for the summer. Mm-hmm. And then in October, there will be something else that they
completely
like.
Completely different. Yep. And in a matter of days, every last mention of Cells at Work will fall off the depth chart.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. And that churn is like, does anyone else in the audience, have you been an anime fan long enough to have noticed what we're talking about? The churn? Like, I mean, how do you feel about it? Are these better times, do you think?
I think they're better in terms of, you know, there's just this incredible, intense variety. And I think also from a craftsmanship perspective, despite the fact that, you know, there's not enough talent working in the anime industry now, they're killing themselves trying to keep up. The actual, you know, the shows look and you know, are great and are fun to watch, but yeah, it's tough. I'm kind of two minds. I mean, I love the fact that you know one of my favorite shows of the last year was Mob Psycho 100. But like if that thing was not getting a sequel, it's like people wouldn't be talking about it anymore. You know?
Yeah. No.
I feel like I loved that show so much during the time when it was on. I would think about it constantly, eagerly anticipate every episode. Then when it was over, within like 2 weeks, it was just like I hadn't thought of it in days. You know? And it's so hard to just keep up with that and be mindful of that. And you know, back then, the popularity arc of a show would last a lot longer.
Yeah.
Even after the show aired, even after everyone had gone out and gotten the DVDs, it felt like that conversation would just go on for another 5 or 6 months.
Yeah, I feel like if like something like Haruhi Suzumiya came out now, it'd be popular for the 3 months it was on in spring. Mm-hmm. Then the next 3 months it was on 2 years later. And then that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
and people would still like it, but it wouldn't be this like giant thing, you know?
Yeah, and it's being compressed even more by these shows that are coming on by a streaming. Then a matter of months or weeks later, they're hitting places like Toonami or Funimation with the dubbed version already available.
Yeah. Yeah, Pop Team Epic showed up on Toonami, like 2 months after it finished airing in Japan?
And the new and to no one's surprise, that new season of Attack on Titan is going to have the same thing happen.
Yeah.
Isn't that coming out at the end of this month on Toonami?
Yeah.
A couple weeks, yeah.
It was just a few years ago, it was the biggest deal in the world that Space Dandy was going to be on Toonami dubbed, you know, at the same time as it was on TV in Japan. Now it's like, that's just kind of
Space Dandy is also an excellent example of just like, at the moment, in its time, I loved riding that little hype wave it generated, but that was over awfully fast, man.
Yeah.
Real fast.
Yeah, well, that show didn't quite perform in the way that they needed it to.
It made me happy, though.
Well, anyway, so in our last, 15 minutes or so here, we should probably take some questions?
We have half an hour.
Oh, half an hour, all right.
Yeah.
Well, in our last half an hour here, we should probably take some questions.
We have a wireless mic at the front of the room here in the aisle, so if you would like to line up.
We'll take our time with these.
Yeah, we'll do our best.
How's it going?
Hey, thanks for coming.
I just woke up an hour ago. So.
Same.
So, you're talking about the anime trend. It made me think about something that I feel like in the past years that I've come to Otakon, I think I've been seeing more gaming cosplay than I've been seeing anime cosplay, and the anime cosplay I'm seeing is stuff that is reoccurring, like mostly like My Hero Academia or like stuff that would not be stopped by the churn because it's just so interesting at the time. So I know Bannon does do some gaming editorials. Mm-hmm. Do you think because games kind of stay in the biggest for longer? Like I saw some Persona 5 coming in, like Persona 5 possibly coming in here. Do you think there would be any more expansion for the games news for ANN?
Yeah, so that is sort of perennially on our we'll do more of this when we have the resources for it kind of a thing. Right now we just do, we report on all the headlines and everything, we do all of that stuff, but we have, sort of a weekly gaming column, and that's, everything's kind of relegated to that. We've started doing more interviews, and we accept gaming, game feature, editorial pitches, but I don't get very many of them, so if you're out there and you want to, do a thing on Metal Gear Solid, hit me up. Mm-hmm. Any Japanese game, we will consider your editorial on it. I would love to do more of it. I need more writers, I guess. So, yes, the answer to your question is yes.
I would say don't even stop there, man. I think if someone has a good pitch about how Overwatch is incredibly obviously influenced by anime.
Yeah, 4 years ago, I would totally do that.
4 years ago. I'm old enough that I forget. Just that game's almost half a decade old.
Is it? No, it's only three years? 2 years? 2 years, right?
It's time dilation, man. I can't keep track of stuff anymore.
Yeah, right. Anyway, thanks for your question.
Thanks.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
I have a question. Basically, anime news network is kind of...
Audience, could you quiet down a little? Just so we can hear the questions better.
You guys have had an advanced voice in the industry for a long time, and especially, but you're always dealing with the small media companies that control the anime up to this point. Now that it is being absorbed by so many of these larger media empires, do you see yourself still being able to kind of get out there, get the information out there, and still be the fan's voice in that industry?
Well, I mean, yes, and we're diverting resources into reporting for that reason. Once that became clear, I started taking resources out of traditional editorial and started putting them into reporting so that we could cover this stuff more effectively. It's going to be a big challenge. It's a really good question. It's going to be a big challenge for us, especially considering how small we are and how big these companies are. But I have a lot of reporter friends who have covered that kind of beat, those companies, for a while. I'm getting some tips from them, and I'm speaking to some other journalists that have done some reporting on those kind that scale before. And we're just, you know, trying to prepare ourselves and make sure we're sort of ready for it. I hope we can do a good job. We're going to try really hard. Thanks. Thank you very much.
Before we get to our next question, it is kind of interesting because I keep thinking, with these new mergers, I just keep thinking of when Netflix came onto the anime scene a few years ago, and like their first two or three titles, when they, you know, like when they had Knights of Cydonia, and they got like the rights for the Harlock movie before anyone else had gotten rights for it outside of Japan. It was like one guy.
Yeah.
It was just this one dude named Eric Barmack, and he was just working in the company, and he was our point of contact. Now he's like, you know, the senior vice president of content development of Asia.
Yeah.
And there's all these other people working under him, and Netflix has like 50 titles.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's interesting how that has grown and expanded. But we've kept up pretty well, I think.
We've tried. Netflix is very chummy now. Like they're very happy to talk to us now, which is nice.
So I hate to use this term, but how do you guys deal with like fake news that circulates, especially in like the anime news circle? Because I remember like a couple years ago, there was like an article that had like one weird translation, and everyone's like, "Oh, Studio Ghibli's closing," and stuff like that. And a couple years ago, there was like a fake real life Gundam movie being made, and it's like, "Here's a shot of the movie," but the article says they're scouting locations. It's poorly written. How do you deal with that when anime is such a niche news market? How do you deal with like poorly written or just fake news?
Well, so the news. So I don't work in the news department.
I remember both of these examples.
Yeah,
the Gundam one was like literally just like a fake, you know, click farm news site was spreading the story around. I don't know if ANN even reported on it.
We didn't. No, so we have a news team and they vet everything. We have this bombastic slogan that people like to make fun of, but it's kind of true. Our people really do care a lot, and they triple check stuff. Like, yeah, like sometimes we have trouble with translations, you know, mistakes happen, but they care a lot about that, and they know it's egg on their face if they post something that is obviously fake or whatever. The other thing is that like they've also like all of them have been doing it for a really long time, so they're pretty good at catching that sort of thing. I always think that stuff is really obvious when I see it.
Yeah.
Like, especially if you just look at the domain, like wherever this, if the original article is in a place that's like super sketchy, it's fake. Like, just don't trust it at all. And I think that's kind of the news team stance. Don't trust anything until you get firsthand verification from a primary source. And that's kind of how they go about their day.
Yeah, the same token, I think that's kind of how you guys have grown, is you're now someone we can use as a reliable source.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
We've tried.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey.
Hi. First of all, I wanted to say thanks for, like, all the work you've done. I've been on A&M for, like, almost 10 years now, and, like, this is a great, great site. Thanks.
Thank you.
My question was more on, like, the Netflix side, like, going back to what you were saying about like writing the hype wave.
Could someone in the back close the door, please? Just keep that door closed. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to keep the noise in the room down. Go ahead.
About like how with like especially with the weekly streaming reviews and stuff, how once basically a show stops airing, a lot of the discussion kind of just dies out. Do you see any kind of difference when it comes to Netflix's like batch release?
I gotta be honest, like, fans like to complain about the Netflix model, and I get annoyed with it too.
Same.
But boy, it's good for traffic. Like, it's really good for traffic. No one, like, High Score Girl, like, I think you can pirate the hell out of that now if you want to.
Yeah.
When it comes out on Netflix is
November.
When the traffic will show up for it.
Yep.
If I sent someone out to review fan subs, which we don't do anymore, to review the fan subs of that show, no one would read them. When Netflix puts it out, 35,000 people, 40,000 people read it. So that's when the traffic shows up, is when Netflix puts it out. They control so many eyeballs and so much of the access that people just wait. They don't care anymore. Like, they're not gonna bother down torrenting something when it'll just be on their phone in like two months.
You know? That effect really is magnified too by the shows that Netflix does that do not stream episode by episode elsewhere. Like when Devilman Crybaby came out, like that was an A-bomb of traffic all over the place.
It sure was.
Yeah. And also, you know, 4 or 5 times a year when Voltron comes out.
Yeah.
Can I, like, add that
today?
Did you find a difference between how, you know, Devilman Crybaby came out all at once and then the traffic for that versus when you did weekly for Violet Evergarden?
Yeah, well, Violet Evergarden was a special case where that was coming out weekly, right?
Not in the US.
Just not in the U.S., but in other parts of the world where there are a lot of people who read ANN.
Yeah, so we had our Japanese correspondent review it, and yeah, that's a good question. So those reviews did really well for us, Violet Evergarden, but it was on Netflix everywhere except the U.S., and it was also, like, the number one most anticipated show of the season that you just couldn't watch in North America that season. So those reviews did really well for us. And Devilman, you're talking about two, like, giant things. Like, Devilman Crybaby was enormous in my heart as well. And, like...
Yeah.
And so is Violet Evergarden. Not quite as big. But I would say, like, the better comparison would be, like, something like Fate Apocrypha, which is, like...
That's what I was going to bring up.
Like, so Fate Apocrypha... Like, a Fate will always do well for us. It being dumped all at once like that, it truncated the discussion. So we only got maybe 2 weeks out of it or so, 2 weeks worth of decent traffic out of Fate Apocrypha. Whereas if it had been weekly, that would have lasted longer. But only in the case of something like Fate Apocrypha, where that's a Fate show, people would show up week after week. Whereas... Would it be the beginning? I'm happy to take whatever I can get out of the one Netflix dump. You know, that's totally fine. It's definitely a case-by-case basis. Some it's better to have it all at once. Some it's not. But, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, man.
Thanks.
Well, my thunder's been stolen for all the... Because my question was Netflix as well. On, like, all the Discord boards and everything like that, there are a lot of complaints about Netflix.
Yeah.
Because... for things like with their batch dumps, unless you go to a site like KISS or something like that, you can't get access to a lot of these shows. So I guess the questions are, you've answered one of them already, is that really good for the industry, what Netflix is doing, trying to control it so much, and whether or not that's yes or no, do you see that expanded by other companies that are starting to dip into the anime?
That's a good question. Netflix is so big and powerful that it doesn't matter. I don't think they have to care at all about what they do and how it impacts the industry, and so they don't. I'm sure they pay attention to it and understand what impact they have on it, but it's such a singular entity that,
it's jarring, too, because the thing is, you know, anime fans are, you know, they're a very intense, very passionate niche audience, and they're used to being, anime fans are accustomed to being able to approach the companies that provide content, be it Crunchyroll or Funimation, and you know, make their concerns known and get feedback, but, like, Netflix don't really have to care, because they're just that big. That can be frustrating from a fan's perspective.
Yeah.
I think that season by season too, they're evaluating how they roll stuff out, because they didn't just do Violet Evergarden weekly in Japan, didn't they do that in some places in Europe as well?
Yeah, yeah. UK and Canada, right?
Yeah.
The only one we got in the US was actually Fansub.
Yeah.
Well, you got it a few months later.
Yeah.
You just had to wait.
Yeah. You just had to wait.
Just had to wait a little bit.
And when it showed up in English and in Japanese. I mean, that's kind of nice, but I can get the frustration. And I feel like quarter by quarter, Netflix is also going to be looking at how their weekly shows perform versus how their dump all at once shows, and they might be adjusting their model. You know, that'd be cool.
I am, like, in as much as I'm totally fine with the Netflix model, like, and I usually try to keep up with maybe 2-3 shows a season. That's about what I have time for. I'm okay with it, but I'll look at, like, the chart, like, the chart of next season's shows, and it'll be like, that one looks good, that one looks good, that one looks good, that one looks good. all of them get taken by Netflix, and I don't get to see any of them until next year or whatever.
Until, until 4 to 6 months later.
Yeah. Sure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, Annan's been around for 20 years, so, they were talking about Franks and how it reminded me that we haven't really seen an episodic show like Franks completely dominate the discussion boards on ANN, A, or anime for like since maybe ReZero. So it basically reminded me, there has been, in the 20 years you've been ANN, there have been a lot of those shows that have episodic has been taken the anime community by like Storm, like Death Note, Eva, Sword Art Online,
Kill and Kill.
Kill and Kill.
Fate Stay Night.
Yep. Out of all of those, like watch the S Storm go down, what was your favorite to react to? Out of like maybe like
I enjoyed fighting with Darling and the Franks.
Yeah. I actually haven't watched that show, so I can't.
Good for you. Don't do it.
I mean I brought up Kill la Kill because that immediately came to my mind because I loved that show, but that show is just so emblematic of just like your problematic favorite, and it really drove a lot of interesting discussion. So I think that one was my favorite of the recent ones. So it was just like, yep, I love the trash show, I love the trash discourse, and it all just actually means it's good.
It was like 10 years ago when I started getting into anime, and then Gios came out.
Another one.
Early days, man.
The one where I'll you know, take a drag from a cigarette and stare into the middle distance is, it's Fate. It's Fate. Fate's the worst one.
They got some really intense fans.
Yeah.
So, for movies such as Your Name or Silent Voice, I was wondering your opinion on how well do you think it's going to do with American audiences? Personally, I like Silent Voice, like how more like movies like that kind of come out here, but it kind of seems like it's struggling, at least from my perspective. What do you guys think?
Well, theatrical anime is doing great. It's more than ever theatrical anime, like almost every month.
Pretty much every month you can see something by like a Fathom event or a single day screening. I think that certain publishers, I don't want to call out anyone by name, but I think they really ought to step up their game because they're missing, like they'll roll out a movie and it won't even be in like the top 10 media markets in the U.S. It'll only be in 5 or 6 of them.
I'm not afraid to say this, and there are people who work there who would agree with me that I don't think Funimation did a very good job with Your Name, like marketing it to American audiences.
I feel like they could have made like
come on.
I think they made about $4 million on that, and they could have made like 5 or 6 times that.
I watched that movie again a couple of weeks ago, and was like holding my. I was like, I can't believe how well put together this thing is.
Yeah,
you cannot believe how commercially appealing that movie. It's incredible. It made like no money here at all.
Also, I will say that, like I say this just watching, there's a publisher in the UK called All the Anime, and they've been doing a lot more theatrical distribution in the last year or so, and they're doing a great job. And you know, they get posters in the theaters, they get trailers, they buy TV ad space, and it works.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what happens when Funimation marketing gets fully absorbed into Sony marketing, and then if Sony marketing handles these limited theatrical releases,
will they be able to get some advertisement into the channel?
Yeah, because Sony Pictures Classics does spend money on marketing, so we'll see. I don't know. You've got a good point though that it is like boutique distributors and stuff right now, and
they just don't really advertise as much.
They don't have a lot of these. They just don't have the resources.
Yeah, they don't have the resources, and also, I mean, I'm frustrated with the Silent Voice just because. It was a pretty cool movie, high profile, but like it was in theaters, I think, for a total of 5 days across a couple of months, and now it's just like, where do you see it now?
You can't exactly.
Can you buy that here yet? No, you can't.
Not yet.
You can get it on UK iTunes.
Yeah. You can buy a British iTunes gift card.
That's
and
what I
load
did.
It onto your account.
That's what I did.
And sideload the movie in. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank
you.
Hey, dude.
Hey.
Hey, guys. Gaming. I love what Heidi's been doing a really good job on speaking gaming. You guys always kind of focused on PCs and consoles and, you know, kind of box software and downloads, but it seems like a lot of the anime tie-ins today are in mobile games, like Fate Grand Order or Bang Dream or this week the Love Life Sunshine Girls or in Grand Blue Fantasy. Is that something you guys want to do more with in the future?
Yeah, definitely.
Shouldn't we?
Finding a motivated writer is difficult. Somebody who's like, man, I really love gacha games on my phone. They just have like a credit card with an unlimited amount of money on it, and that's just what they do with their time. Like, I would have to find.
They don't have money, and they'll write thousands of words about how depressing their drops were this week.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely want like motivated writers who want to come in and write about that stuff. But it's like an action item on my to-do list is try to find people who want to write about this stuff. So the answer to your question is yes, I would love to do that.
You just need the Heidi and Mogadishu.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Yeah. That's what I need. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I used to be an avid reader of Protoculture Addicts when it was this one. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I really, really like about it is what you guys do with anime. It made different writers sort of handle different categories of non-anime material. And basically, what I got from that, there was a lot of stuff that was cool. You know, like mm-hmm. feature films from other countries, maybe TV shows, and are you guys ever thought nostalgically you wanted to recapture those categories of non-anime material that's cool so people can keep an eye on the stuff besides the anime material that you guys put out?
I mean, I would like... I like that, and yeah, I know what you're talking about with Protoculture
Addicts.
That's
exactly what you mean, yeah, and that was cool.
Helped
me get into Hong Kong movies back in the day.
And frankly, like, a lot of magazines back then did that kind of thing. Like, they would also cover, like, martial arts cinema and, like, cool, like, French animation and, you know, stuff from
foreign
China and stuff
television.
Like that. Yeah, foreign television, they would. I miss that. It's like, the late 90s, early 2000s is when that would kind of happen. We would definitely, I like that, but I know what the forum comments would be. Which is, this is an anime.
This is an anime. What's it doing here?
And my boss would be like, why are we spending resources on this? Because it's not anime.
And I feel like the last big thing we did that was explicitly not anime was Big Fish and Begonia, which still looked like anime, so...
Which people will say, like, yeah, sure, it's anime, you know, so... That's a neat thing to do. It would require, I think, resources and infrastructure that we don't really have. But I like the idea.
Maybe you'd be like, if not something... full column, like a small capsule columns that people or links to and say, hey, this is what's also happening in the non-anime world.
Yeah.
It's cool, and if you don't have the time to research, here's a link and I'll throw you something or someone else to look into so people can get a wider picture of what's happening in the Asian cultural world.
Yeah.
That's still good stuff that, you know, because I would have to sort of search the web to so many sites and time. It's time consuming to track down, you know, what's cool, what's happening. And one of the things I like about Protoculture Addicts is it's very centralized.
Right.
Finding all that stuff in one, even though it was a printed word, you know, you guys still do great with what you do with anime news. That's why I follow when the demise of Protoculture Addicts straight to you guys, but I sort of missed it.
I totally get it. Thanks, man. Thanks for your comment. Have a good one.
Thanks a lot for coming.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey.
What's up?
So this is about writing about anime. And the one thing that's always kind of put me off, I think I would have an interesting voice and an interesting perspective, but I just don't really think I'm very good at analyzing the actual themes and the story and the characters. So how do I get better at the actual, like, analysis part of it?
Read a lot of criticism.
Yeah.
Just read a lot of it. And when you watch stuff, try to maintain that critical eye. Like, look for those things. You kind of have to be... You have to watch actively and think about what the story's trying to tell you and read a little bit about the people who made it and, you know, try and figure out what they were trying to say with it, if anything. And usually that will... But the big thing is just read a lot of film criticism you can actually get, like, if you really want to get into the weeds, there's a textbook called Film Theory and Criticism that is in, like, its 15th edition or something like that. If you're serious about it, I would recommend picking it up and leafing through it, and it's just a bunch of essays from famous writers about how they thought about film and how they like to think about film and what film makes them think of, and it's it helped me. It opened my mind a lot to like different ways of thinking about movies. So I recommend that book.
Film theory and criticism.
Yeah.
Whatever the most recent edition is.
Film theory
is,
and criticism, and also just media criticism in general. Because I always tell people I started as a music critic.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Read a lot of examples of criticism and reviews.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. And you know, you can, and like, sure, he was super populist, but like, you could pick up any collection of Roger Ebert's reviews, especially his negative reviews. They're fun to read, and you'll get a sense of like what he was looking for and like how people definitely responded to what he was saying. So it's a good guide, I think. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Thanks for your question.
Thank you. Hey, what's up?
Babe. Hello.
I love the shirt.
Oh, thank you.
You got the Save A shirt. He has spiky hair. It means you like it. It's an anime guy. Yeah.
I've been reading your guys' website for years, and great to finally see you guys in person. I have a question about the working conditions in the anime industry. I guess like over the years, as I've just been reading up on the working conditions, it's just like everybody working in that industry is extremely stressed, overworked, and like on the verge of a mental breakdown. Mm-hmm. Like for the JoJo's Part 5 premiere at Anime Expo, they interviewed the director, and he was just like, "What are you doing? You're not working." He's just like, "I go to my house and I sleep, and then I wake up and go back to work." And you mentioned in the past, Zach, about how the anime industry shouldn't like unionize and stuff like that. I know in the games industry, there's been a lot of talk about unionizing, and I think like Waypoint has been covering a lot of like talk in the industry about like working conditions and like unionization efforts. Have you considered like editorial content covering the working conditions in the anime industry and perhaps advocating for the anime industry to unionize?
Yes, and I've pushed resources in that direction already to some of our people in Japan. So I really want to report on that. That's a big thing for me. So I'm hoping we can do some good reporting on that angle. But it's a great question, and the answer is yes. I really want to cover that stuff. It's really important
to us.
It's
a very important question.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, man.
Hi. I had a sort of question about writing, or specifically, like, you were saying you were looking for, like, sort of regular writers who could meet a deadline, but what if, like, somewhere, I was thinking maybe I had, like, a couple, like, ideas or, like, column things, and if I just wanted to do, like, a one-and-done, here's a piece, do you want to, like...
That's a feature pitch. You can actually, that would make you an editorial contributor. Okay. If you go on the site... There's a little drop-down menu that says jobs. If you click on that, it will give you the full listing of everything we need from you for a feature pitch. So you just send me your pitch, and I will say yay or nay, and I will pay you to write it if I like your pitch. And that's all it is. And it's literally just an open door. Whenever you have more, you can come in, and you can also say, like, okay, also, like, if we like you, if we like working with you, if you're easy to work with and we like your writing, I will come to you with stuff and be like, hey, can you toss this out real quick? You know, that kind
Absolutely.
Of thing.
Absolutely, yeah. And if you go to the site, and I think it's just under the Features tab, you know, look for anything that isn't a regular column for ideas of how a feature story should be structured. But yeah, that's something that Ann absolutely does.
Yeah.
Those are well worth keeping in mind.
Okay. I did have one sort of wild suggestion, or at least like idea. Have you ever considered... having ANN or something, trying to do like something like Critical Role, like an actual play podcast, that would be like...
Oh yeah, you haven't talked about the ANNcast.
Yeah, I haven't talked about ANNcast at all. The podcast, yeah. I have long thought about stuff like that maybe we could do. Yay! One more time. Before we're finished.
One last hurrah.
that's a fun question. I want to do something like that, but it would involve having the right people and the resources to put it together. But I would really like... That stuff is so much fun.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun to make, too. So, I kind of just want to do it because it's fun.
It's such an incredibly daunting comparison because the Critical Role team are an incredibly talented group of people.
Yeah, I'm friends with a bunch of those guys, and they're all they're all super down to earth. And like
bust their butts on that thing.
When it was just taking off, they were just mind blown at how successful it was.
Yeah,
I got to watch people go from like wait, people care about this at all? To like now they're like gigantic.
Now they're celebrities.
Yeah.
Some of them were also quasi celebrities. Now they're like.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, thanks for your question.
Thanks, Ferris. Very much.
Hey guys. As I was actually waiting in line, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, oh, I've never really used the site that much. And then as I was thinking, I was like, oh, wait, no, I have used the site a little bit, like, over the last 20 years just for checking out the series that I wanted to find out a little bit of stuff about. But the main question that I wanted to ask is kind of more just an open-ended, opinionated one. Since you guys have been invested into the culture of anime for the last 20 years, what trends or themes would you say that you've seen rise and fall that you really didn't expect to get as big as they were? And which ones did you feel kind of die faster than you thought they would?
Well, we better answer it quickly.
Well, I mean, I always tell people, it's like, even though it's has its up and downs, when it took off the way it did, I was shocked at how hot Attack on Titan got, how quickly. I did not have a sense at all of its popularity as a manga in Japan. And really, it was just like, from that first episode, from that first week, you could tell, like, this is going to be a global hit that we haven't seen in years and years.
I think the thing that I'm surprised every 3 months at how fast the fandom darlings just completely fall into the mud after they're done airing.
That's true.
People are like, this is the best thing I have ever seen. Like, it feels like the next day they don't remember him.
My husband, no. And then, then a week later, it's all gone.
It's all in the, it's just like shunt a pile of merchandise into the garbage every 3 months.
So, as a smaller follow-up to that, do you think that the reason the churn is now so strong is just because the gateway for consumption is just so much wider that now you can literally find anything you want and you have to burn through it fast before the next wave hits?
It's the same across all content.
It's like across all media.
All media is like that now. That churn is everywhere. It's just because we're focused on this one thing, this one medium, we notice it there so much more than anywhere else. And anime is also pretty intense. Like, Netflix does not have 40 new shows every 3 months.
Yeah.
They don't. Mm-hmm. Anime does. Yeah. Right. Thanks, man.
Thank you very much.
Okay, last one, real quick. Hey, Mikhail.
Hey, guys. Hey, dude. So, there's always chatter out there, and that anime is not entirely objective.
Sure.
There's always...
Right, human beings. It's run by human beings. Yeah.
And there's always some kind of bias. That there's always some kind of agenda. That it leads a certain way, and especially, and maybe especially as it moves more and more into editorial content, as the managing editor, how do you deal with that? How do you respond with that? And what is your take on that?
I used to take it a little bit more seriously. Now it's just people are. I've literally never had that conversation with someone where it was not revealed within the first about 60 seconds that what they're actually upset about is that their perspective is not the dominant one on the site. That complaint I can't do anything about. And when I understand that that's what your complaint is, I'm finished with it. The few times where I've gotten feedback and they were like, you're unfairly biased in favor of whatever the other thing. If they're making a coherent argument, I'll sit down, I'll hear them out. And sometimes it's like, yeah, you know, maybe our perspective on this was a little tilted in this direction, and let's nudge it back the other way. Like, I've never worked with any group of people. I haven't worked with a lot of groups of people, obviously, because I've been in the same job for like a decade. But everyone I work with at ANN is very. If you tell them you made a mistake, they're like, oh, what? Let me fix it right now for you. Mm-hmm. They fix it right away. So. I don't, like, you're biased and every, you know, that's such a standard complaint to make about the media that it just kind of washes past me unless they have evidence and an argument that they're trying to make and here's what I'm talking about specifically, like a specific case. Otherwise, I just ignore it. People say that about literally every publication.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Also, I think that we can give ANN a little bit of credit for evolving with the times, because I feel like, you know, back in the mid to late 2000s when, you know, they'd be preview guides for the really fan servicey shows, there would always be like, you'd always have some comedy take on it, like a Simpson screenshot or something.
Yeah.
Now it's just like, there are specific writers on staff who, like, that's their bag.
Yeah, we grew up a little bit.
And we try to push that stuff towards them because, it's, you know, people want to read the takes from the audience that appreciates the material. They don't want to just have people just like, oh, yeah, it's the booby show. Now let me dunk on it over and over again.
Yeah, we're kind of finished dunking on booby shows.
Yeah.
Not completely.
Not completely, but I mean. There are still examples that are just like, no, no, you can't not wait into the arena on that one.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Anyway, we're totally out of time, but thank you all so much for coming.
Okay, that was that. Huge thanks to Mike for doing the panel with me and everybody for showing up. Again, it was great to see y'all. Theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, all that stuff. Leave us comments and reviews and likes and all those sorts of things that help us out. And again, Jacob and I will both be back next week for a new episode. See y'all then.